Funds for the California Report are provided by Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information available at chevron.com. The California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org. And URS Corporation, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical services to public agencies and private companies. URSCorp.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. New numbers confirm our fears. The state's economy is kind of stuck. Not getting worse exactly, but hardly getting better.
We can't place our kids now, our youth program, because all of the jobs at McDonald's and Burger King, those jobs are now taken over by adults. So that's how bad it is.
Coming up, the art and science of finding a job, how to figure out what you're really good at, and then sell yourself to potential employers. Also, how climate change is forcing winemakers to think beyond Cabernet, Sauvignon Blanc, and Zinfandel.
The interesting thing for me as a breeder is to take advantage of this and say, okay, here's a chance now to change thought, and let's actually readapt varieties to California.
It's the California Report. Well, new numbers show California's jobs picture is heading in the wrong direction. The unemployment rate bumping back up to 12% in July, that according to figures released Friday morning by the state. It's not a dramatic change from June's 11.8% unemployment rate, and it's not all bad news. Analyst Christopher Thornburg of Beacon Economics notes promising upticks in new jobs in the information and financial sectors, this despite news that Bank of America will shed thousands of jobs nationwide.
This does not look like a report that would indicate that California is going into a recession. It just mainly says that we remain in the midst of a weak recovery.
The weak link, says Thornburg, the public sector, government jobs, along with construction. Frustration over the economy spilled out of the pews during a town hall meeting this week at the Full Gospel Church in East Oakland.
We want jobs!
The event, billed as a speak-out for good jobs, featured House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and some of her colleagues here in this Democratic stronghold.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me round, turn me round. They can't turn me round.
Although it was a friendly audience, there was plenty of anxiety and anger. Henry Clark from Richmond is really concerned about how the economy is affecting public safety.
Well, first of all, if people don't have no jobs, are they going to make some money somewhere? You can't go out there and tell the youth in North Richmond or here in Oakland that, they should not be dealing drugs or committing crimes and we're not providing no jobs for them.
Others here complained of being underemployed or needing better benefits, like Everardo Hernandez. He's a trucker for the Port of Oakland. Hernandez lives in the Central Valley with his wife and two kids, and says after paying for fuel and other expenses, the $4 to $6 an hour he brings home means it's very tough to make ends meet.
I can't afford to have dental work done here in the state. It's too expensive. So I got to go to Tijuana. Whenever I need dental care, I got to go all the way to Tijuana, or I got to take my kids all the way to Tijuana, because I can, if I do it the dental care here, it's going to be too expensive. And with this wages, I can't afford it.
In some ways, Hernandez is among the lucky ones. He has a job. Others who don't gathered in Fairfield this week at a job club sponsored by Solano County. They shared stories from recent job interviews, read email from former job club members who are now working, and offered each other support. Norma Jackson from Fairfield lost her job as a corporate trainer in early June.
I thought I would be working until I was ready to retire. Well, you know, really retire. Well, here I am.
Jackson has a master's degree, and she's looking for work as a trainer.
One of the things I made it a point to do is to at least put in applications, at least five a day. That the first time I did it, it took me 2 hours to fill out a stupid application, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. It's actually a job looking for a job.
Chuck Cameron from Vacaville was a wine purchaser in Napa Valley, says he's been out of work for nearly 2 years now. Some of the jobs he sought had nearly 150 applicants. He takes solace in just getting interviews.
Staying positive and having a good attitude is a big part of it. And although it gets tough at times, you just got to kind of sometimes you have to suck it up and keep a smile on your face, even though you know it's really hard.
Mildred James works with Solano County, trying to help people find jobs. She says many of the folks she sees are highly educated, master's degrees, even PhDs. Folks who suddenly find themselves unemployed after having the same job 20, even 25 years.
A lot of times they haven't interviewed in 20 years or 25 years, so they don't know how to interview. They don't know how to do a resume because they haven't done a resume in that length of time. So they're just like, okay, where do I start?
Well, a good resume is helpful, maybe even essential when you're on the hunt for a job. Cliff Flamer can help you with that. He's owner of Brightside Resumes in the Bay Area. They offer career counseling and resume writing, help with job coaching, that kind of thing. And Cliff, how do you go about finding a job? What's the right way to find a job, or at least to get in the door for an interview these days?
You have to start by looking at yourself. So you have to look inward. A lot of people just jump at the job boards, go to a Simply Hired or an Indeed and start looking. And you actually want to stop and look at yourself and figure out what are my points of value that I have to offer and get very clear on that and have very specific stories, evidence-backed stories that you can do the job, that you're good at that.
So it's not just what kind of job do you want, but what do you bring to the table as an employee?
That's right. And if you actually truly feel like you're good at something, like you have something to offer, your confidence comes through, your passion comes through, and you're more likely to keep somebody's ear.
In this kind of market, though, it must be hard just to get to the point of finding someone's ear. I mean, there's so many applicants per job, would be my guess, especially for sort of middle-level jobs. So how do you break through?
You have to take the perspective of the employer to be successful in your job search. You have to think about what their needs are, what their frustrations are, so you can address them directly, either in a one-to-one conversation or through posting your resume or sending a cover letter or whatever the case may be. In terms of making things happen, you have to create your own luck. You have to create opportunities. And a lot of people just call this networking. I try to avoid the N-word whenever I can, because people for some reason don't like to network. Once I say that, they kind of shut down when I'm working with clients. I think we all get stuck behind job boards. Everything's done online, but you have to get out.
So when you say get out, what do you mean?
Going to conferences, trying to pick up an internship, holding an interview, even an informal interview with a friend or friend of a friend, perhaps joining an organization, even doing something like taking a tour of a facility or of a plant if it's in your line of work. For example, if you're interested in solar panel manufacturing and you wanted to sell it, it wouldn't be a bad idea to go, slip in and do a tour. You might not get a job that way, but you're also going to kind of build up your skill set.
We're short on time, but give us, leave us with another idea or two that real people can really use when they hear this.
One idea you can do is kind of flip a seemingly irrelevant experience into a strength. I could actually use you, Scott, as an example for this.
Okay.
I did my homework on you.
All right.
So you had a little dog leg in your career. You left and went into politics, right?
In the late 80s. Yes, I did.
And then came back. And a lot of times people would say, well, I better kind of cover that up and let's just stick to the relevant material. But I'm sure you could come up with a parallel. Some skill you picked up in politics that people in your field don't have because they didn't do politics. So you can weave that into your story, become a more memorable candidate, and be able to talk about your entire work history. So that's one thing you could do. Can I go with one more?
One more, sure.
I can't stop myself here. So you have companies struggling, merging, disappearing, evaporating. You want to look at how did you help out in the past? How did you pitch in? So when the company was shrinking and you were afraid of losing your job, how did you, did you do triple the workload? How did you step in and do something about it? Did you find ways to cut costs? And did you just survive the rounds of layoffs? Because that says something in itself, that you're of value if you survive. Hey, the first two, but maybe not the third.
So you got to sell yourself.
Well, you do have to sell yourself.
Sounds
you got
like
to believe
good at that.
In yourself first.
All right. Cliff Flamer, he is the owner of Brightside Resumes in the Bay Area. Cliff, thanks a lot.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks for having me.
Grim as it is, there are bright spots in this dismal economy, and here to tell us about those is Dion Lim. He's president and chief operating officer of SimplyHire.com, an online job search engine with some, what, Dion, 8 million jobs listed worldwide?
We pick up 8 million jobs worldwide from thousands of sources, directly from corporate websites, newspapers, job boards.
Well, let's focus in on California a little bit. I said there were some bright spots. I think you probably agree. What are they?
Well, I think the good news is that in California, there are over 500,000 job listings in Northern and Southern California. For people who have been having a tough time finding a job, over the last 3 months, jobs have been declining, but the last month, it actually started to pick up a little bit.
And where are they? Are they clustered in certain places like Silicon Valley?
Yeah, I think the best place in the state for jobs right now is Silicon Valley. SimplyHire.com tracks the number of job listings as well as the number of people who are unemployed. And San Francisco Bay Area has the best ratio of for every two people who are unemployed, there's one job opening.
Hmm. You know, there are a lot of unemployed people. You're saying there's 500,000 jobs. Is it a case of the people who are unemployed not quite matching up in terms of their skill sets with the jobs that are open or what?
Scott, that is a little bit of a problem. I think that the economies that we're seeing in California are really multiple economies, and one of them is the high-growth technology sector. If you're an engineer today, you're actually pretty happy. In Silicon Valley, there are about 40,000 to 50,000 engineers, and we have 16,000 job openings on SimplyHire.com. So there's a job opening for every three engineers. That's pretty good. If you're in the unskilled area or if you're a new grad, if you've graduated in 2009, 10, or 11, it's a little bit tougher going.
And when you say that there are jobs in Silicon Valley and in high-tech companies in San Francisco, are you really referring mostly to engineering jobs, or is it the whole, you know, scope of spectrum of jobs, sales, marketing, all those things?
The hype is often around engineering, and I think that that's sometimes where you'll see the most amazing stories and salaries, people being paid $1 million to be an engineer. Fact of the matter is that a company like Google that has 30,000 employees, 10,000 of them are engineers, but 10,000 of them are actually salespeople. And while companies that are developing their technologies have a real need for engineers early on, as their products gain traction, they actually need sales and marketing people. And so sales actually is one of the areas where there's a lot of hiring.
Now, we've seen in the last year or so, San Francisco in particular, making a big push to keep companies like Twitter here. Zynga is here. They're going to be expanding. How important is it to have those companies in a particular place like, you know, San Francisco, so for other jobs that kind of grow from those companies?
Well, I think one reason it's a great place to live, being the Bay Area, is because we not only create jobs at specific companies such as Facebook or Google or Salesforce.com, but they create a platform that other companies can build things on top of. So Zynga, as you mentioned, is a gaming company that really had a lot of its success based on Facebook. And when companies like Zynga hire a lot of people, then you have restaurants, you have lawyers, you have accountants. And I think that that first, second, and third degree job creation effect is critical to the success of any geographic area.
Let's take it out of the Bay Area a little bit. When you look throughout California, what do you see in terms of different, you know, regional differences, Southern California, Central Valley, Northern California?
Sure. The best is certainly Northern California. We have this ratio of two job seekers for every job listing. The most painful area would probably be Sacramento. They've been hit very hard with the real estate issues.
Government layoffs, too.
Government layoffs, absolutely. And we've seen a ratio of around seven unemployed people for every job opening. Now, you have areas like San Diego, which are probably more in the middle, four job seekers for every one job listing. And Los Angeles is probably having a little bit more difficulty. There are about five unemployed people for every job opening. As a quick data point, in Bay Area, we have about 120,000 job listings. In Los Angeles, which is a much larger city, they have about 120,000 job openings as well.
Yeah. And it's sort of a numbers game to a certain extent. It's not quite like going door to door and selling insurance, but it is, you know, you have to keep out there, keep yourself out there, meeting people, talking yourself up in a way, right?
For new grads, the statistic is that they have to apply to an average of 100 positions. They need 16 interviews before they're actually going to get a job. I think expectations are definitely important for job seekers. There are jobs out there. You need to work hard. Don't get discouraged. It is a numbers game.
Dion Lim, he's president and chief operating officer of SimplyHired.com. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, Scott.
You can hear more of Dion Lim and Cliff Flamer and find out some helpful links to job search resources. It's all at our website, californiareport.org. Sharing photos is easier than ever now, and we'd like to see yours. We're creating a new photo gallery called Only in California, and that's where you come in. We want to share your images of the people, places, and experiences that make California unique. You'll find details on our website, californiareport.org. California is famous for wines made from Cabernet, Zinfandel, and Pinot Noir grapes, but Negro Amaro or Nero de Avila, well, those wine grapes grow better in warmer weather, the kind of climate California could be facing if temperatures continue gradually rising. And as Lauren Summer reports, for wineries that have made their reputations on familiar-sounding varietals, adapting to climate change could be a tough sell.
Talk to any wine lover in California, and they'll tell you how lucky they are to live in such a rich wine-producing region. Take the recent meeting of the San Francisco Wine Lovers Group at Toast Wine Bar in Oakland.
I like California Pinot Noir.
Usually I'm drawn to Sauvignon Blanc.
Sonoma, Napa, Russian River, Zins, I love.
Cabs. Although I do like Pinots, but earthier Pinots.
In fact, the type of grape, or varietal, is how most of us think about wine.
That's the big problem.
That's Andy Walker, a grape breeder at the University of California, Davis, which has one of the largest viticulture departments in the country.
We've spent the last 100 years emphasizing varieties, and we've really marketed those names very effectively.
We're walking through UC Davis's test vineyard, where hundreds of different wine grapes from around the world are grown.
This is Petit Syrah.
The vast majority are unknown to consumers, because most wineries focus on only a handful of grapes.
Chardonnay, Cabernet, Merlot, Pinot Noir, those would make up probably a large percentage.
And they're all French varieties, mostly suited for cool climates. California is warm by comparison, and thanks to climate change, it's expected to get a lot warmer. Extreme heat can be the enemy of good wine.
Well, it destroys acidity, primarily. And it changes color and aromatics.
According to a recent study from Stanford University, about 2 degrees of warming could reduce California's premium wine-growing land by 30% to 50%. That could happen as soon as 2040. Water supply is also expected to be an issue.
I think the interesting thing for me as a breeder is to take advantage of this and say, okay, here's a chance now to change thought, and let's actually readapt varieties to California.
But in many circles, grape breeding is a dirty term, according to Walker.
Viticulture is the most backward form of horticulture that exists. We use these varieties that haven't been changed for decades, for millennia in some cases, and it really doesn't make any sense.
The problem starts in today's vineyards. If you look at rows of Pinot Noir vines, you aren't just looking at the original varietal, you're looking at clones. That's because vines are grown from a branch that's taken off an existing plant.
Pinot Noir is being propagated year after year after year. This essentially means that grapes have not really been having sex very much.
Sean Miles is a geneticist at the Nova Scotia Agricultural College. He says breeding is key for other crops since farmers need seeds to plant every year. But wine grapes miss this opportunity to develop adaptability and disease resistance since vines don't grow from seeds.
That means that we're not allowing the genetic material to be shuffled anymore. That genetic material is now standing still in time. And while the pathogens are evolving, the Pinot Noir is not.
Andy Walker says there's plenty of genetic diversity out there for breeding if you wanted to make today's varieties more heat tolerant or drought resistant. But there's a very big problem. Once you breed your Pinot Noir with something else, you can't call it Pinot Noir anymore.
The last decision is the hardest. Can we market this variety? We know it produces exceptional wine. We know the quality is better. But the next step is, can we actually market it?
Walker says that's a deal breaker for many vineyards who think consumers won't buy varieties they don't recognize. He says looking ahead to climate change, there are already varieties out there today from Italy and Spain that would do well in a warmer California.
We could produce Barbera instead, or Negromaro, or Nero d'Avola from southern Italy, and then we'd be far better ahead.
These lush reds are popular in Italy, but not so well known to Californians. Walker says it'll come down to marketing.
I don't think it's the consumer that's going to make the shift. They have to be directed. And I think in terms of climate change and disease pressure, the logical thing is to start trying to promote it and shift people's opinion and impressions.
I think it's really a pull from consumers.
Nick DeKuzlian is a vice president at E&J Gallo Winery, the largest family-owned winery in the U.S.
In most cases, we're responding to consumer demand for a cultivar.
DeKuzlian says Gallo has been testing new wine varieties throughout its vineyards and has found some promising grapes.
The problem is we can't necessarily sell those varieties. Consumers aren't aware of them. The marketing aspect of climate change and the adaptation to climate change, really the hurdles on the marketing side are much, much more significant.
Since vineyards can last up to 30 years, he says switching varieties is a major financial gamble.
The wine business is an extremely capital-intensive business. The financial risk of planting the wrong variety in the wrong place is pretty significant.
Still, given the temperature and water supply changes projected for California, DeKuzlian sees the market shifting eventually.
I'm looking forward to having a world-class California Nero d'Avola on the market soon.
For the California Report, I'm Lauren Sommer.
John Lennon once wrote that life is what happens while you're busy making other plans. For Fiona Goodwin, a personal crisis led to a very unexpected turn of events. Sarah Golden met up with her in Los Angeles as part of our series, Turning Points.
From a young age, Fiona Goodwin wanted to serve others. 25 years ago, when she was deep in a teenage existential crisis, she became a born-again Christian. She moved from her London home to a convent in Italy, nestled between towering Alps and a glittering lake. She was on the path to become a nun.
You are literally saying, I'm not bothered about possessions, I'm not bothered about a relationship, all I care about is being of service, and I didn't think life was about being happy, it was about helping.
After a year at the convent, she decided she would take her vows to become a nun. She returned to London to tell her family. Her stepfather called it intellectual suicide. Her mother worried about her livelihood. Goodwin hesitated. She never got on that train back to Italy.
I sort of had an epiphany on the way to the Victoria Railway Station in London. I suddenly got this really, really uncomfortable feeling that I wasn't doing the right thing. So I sat down and did what all bad Christians do, which is flick your Bible open for advice. And the verse that I read, I interpreted as that I wasn't to go.
Proverb 4:27 reads, "Do not swerve to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil."
And I knew that going to that convent, it wasn't my path, and that I had to be in the real world.
The convent was also refuge from something else, her sexuality. Up to this point in her life, she had only dated men.
I also had some attraction to women, and I think I wanted to get away from all of that.
She had been so sure life of service was her calling. Sexuality, of whatever preference, was just not part of it. But now Goodwin felt lost. She hadn't even told the convent yet, as though she were keeping her options open. Then, one Saturday, swishing through autumn leaves in Highgate Woods, Fiona saw a man, walking his Rottweiler, coming toward her.
He stopped in front of me, and I thought to have a chat. And he said to me, "If you don't have sex with me, I'm going to set my dog onto you." And I was taken aback, but obviously being English, I remained composed. And I looked at him and I looked at the dog and I said, I'll take the dog. And the next thing that went through my head was, I don't want this gentleman to be my first, you know, not in the woods and not with the dog watching.
So she ran with the dog right behind her. He leapt through the air. Goodwin spun around, swinging her arm to fend him off and exposing the left side of her body. The dog sunk his teeth into her chest.
And I shouted out, "Jesus Christ," at the top of my voice. And the dog backed off. It was a miracle.
The man in the woods sent Fiona Goodwin into a philosophical tailspin. It made her skeptical of her relationship with men. Finally, she realized it was time to leave the convent completely. She phoned the Mother Superior.
She said, "Well, you know, the devil doesn't want you to come either." I thought, ooh. I thought maybe the dog was the devil in the park, you know.
But Goodwin had not abandoned her religion altogether. She joined a youth mime troupe to deliver a Christian message in Central America. Goodwin played the part of Satan and spent months traveling from city to city dressed as him.
It was very slinky and tight-fitting black suit. I had to look beautiful and nasty at the same time.
In Honduras, Goodwin fell in love with the woman playing the Virgin Mary. She also fell in love with performance.
When I came out of the closet, it was as if all of me came out. My personality, my humor, and then I get this crazy, shocking idea that I could do stand-up comedy.
Fiona Goodwin, and I am actually, I am English, and I really am clever.
Comedy fit her. And it always had. Take, for example, the story of the dog in the woods. On stage in comedy clubs around Los Angeles, Fiona Goodwin has turned that trauma into laughs.
So I went, "Jesus Christ!" And the dog let go. Now, some of you, cynically, are thinking to yourselves, "Jesus Christ was the name of the dog."
Humor was her mechanism to understand all the pain and complexities of the world and herself.
Life is hard enough, and so I think taking time out to have a laugh is not optional. Laughter heals people. And I had such a narrow idea about what being of service was. I thought, how can I make amends to the universe, to the world, for all the time that I have wasted not being me? And I guess the only thing I can do is to start being me.
Fiona Goodwin's journey is about to take another unexpected turn. Her visa expired this spring and she had to leave the country. Goodwin took the opportunity to launch a world tour of comedy. She doesn't know where her next home will be. For now, she says, she's a wanderer. For the California Report, I'm Sarah Golden in Los Angeles.
That story was produced in collaboration with the USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. You can hear more of the profiles in our Turning Point series at californiareport.org. And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our director is Susie Rocho. Paul Encore is behind the board today. We had additional engineering from Seal Muller. The senior online editor is Gabriel Cohen with help from David Marks. Caitlin Esch helped produce our stories about jobs. Our interns are Jefferson Beavers, Julia Bernstein, Bridget Bodner, and Nicholas Carpenter. Our producer is Victoria Maleone with help this week from Amy Machado. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. The California Endowment, building healthy communities because that's where health happens. More information at calendow.org. And the SunPower Corporation, offering high-efficiency solar energy solutions to households and businesses in California and worldwide. The world standard for solar. SunPowerSolar.com.